This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for May 4th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Iowa's governor has declared a state of emergency over the state's H5N2 bird flu outbreak. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on what corn farmers should do about black cutworm. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Here are how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 493 and three quarters, up a half. July, 498 and a quarter, down 2 1/4. Soft May wheat settled at 469 and a quarter, down 3/4. July, 472 and 3/4, down 1 1/4. May corn settled at 358 and 3/4, down 1. July, 361 and a quarter, down 1 3/4. September, 367 and 3/4, down 2. December, 377 and 3/4, down 2 1/2. May soybeans settled at 983, up 14 1/2. July, 976 and a quarter, up 11 1/2. November, 949, up 8 1/4. May soybean meal settled at 315.80, up 110. May soybean oil settled at 32.47, up $1.03. And now some last trades. June live cattle, 150.90, up 172 1/2. May feeders, 215 even, up 137 1/2. May lean hogs, 76.82 1/2, up 82 1/2. And then June at 82.05, up 80 cents. And those are settlements and last trades on this Monday afternoon from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says the Midwest will see daily rounds of showers and thunderstorms through the next week, and planting will come to a halt in many areas before a drying trend May 12th through the 18th allows field work to resume. The driest areas in the Dakotas and Minnesota will benefit from rain this week, and notable improvements in soil moisture will occur, and conditions for early crop development should be highly favorable. Subsoil moisture will not likely be restored, however, and follow-up rain will be needed to ensure favorable soil conditions continue in the Dakotas and Minnesota. The drier weather expected May 12th through the 18th will promote excellent conditions for early crop development across the Midwest after the week of wet weather that will precede the drying trend. High temperatures through Wednesday will be in the upper 60s to the lower 80s most often, with some middle 60s in the north and a few middle 80s in the south. Highs on Thursday will be in the middle 70s to the lower 80s, with some middle 80s in the south and some lower 70s and a few middle and upper 60s in the far northwest. Highs Friday and Saturday will be in the 70s and lower 80s, with some middle 80s in central and eastern areas and 50s and 60s common from the Dakotas to Minnesota. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Pete. Hello, Pete. Well, we've seemed to lost Pete. Let me try to get him back on the telephone. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon.
Well, I exercised the old board, and it came back to life, so that's a good thing. We have a report due out in about 45 minutes, Pete, with an update from NASS on planting progress. What do you think it will say?
I think it'll be, Illinois will be huge, but nationwide, I'm going to predict over 55 planting on corn and 18 to 20 on soybeans.
Any pockets of Illinois that hasn't made good progress yet?
There's a few pockets here and there, but in general, most of Illinois is close to done planting, except deep south and deep north. There's places that are only half done, and an awful lot of Illinois is 50 to 100% done on beans scattered through the middle, but there's a lot of just started on beans to a third done on beans to still planting corn.
Trade probably won't make much then of this week's rather closed weather opportunity for planting is just not there, right?
It is in a lot of areas. We had grains through this week right through the middle, but I've got guys planting today in northern Illinois. Got guys planting in southern Illinois today.
Ah. So let's go ahead and look at the big board. Soybeans very much the leader to the upside today.
They were, and it was based on China buying loads and loads or trying to buy loads and loads of bean oil. Usually bean meal leads it because it's the main ingredient when you break it down. And but bean oil was up over 100 points, and that kept corn nearby. July's up 11, and the May's up 14, new crop up 8. And they had been down early in the day before that bean oil started being purchased by the Chinese.
Have crushing margins been poor in China of late?
They are getting better, and especially on the oil.
All right, let's go ahead and look at that compared to the corn market. You would think, okay, with a double-digit soybean, we might see corn up a couple, but that's not the case.
Corn continues to go sideways to lower, down another 1 to 2 today after being down 3, pretty much across the board. Lots of corn available here and in the rest of the world. Elevators are bidding, up for corn. It's not the Board of Trade that's doing it. It's the basis in a lot of places getting corn out of farmers' hands. There's more old corn out there in farmers' hands than we've had in many years.
More than 50% of the crop, if you were to believe the last quarterly stocks report, don't suppose it's really changed all that much since.
No, and if you talk to a lot of elevators, a lot of what they have still is not owned by them, and they're a little worried about getting it out of there before the new crop harvest comes in.
And the more that corn hangs around this 358 level and, in 361 level, probably the more likely it is that producers are going to wait it out maybe all the way into July.
That's not surprising at all with low prices.
So if they do that, then they're going to maybe almost be looking at two crops marketing at the same time. What advice would you have for those who still have old crop to market and haven't done anything with their new crop yet?
I would be marketing some of it all along or protecting the downside with puts, but I would be dribbling some cash out there anytime anything goes up a little and replacing it if I want with calls of some sort.
Now, not a lot of people have old crop soybeans left, so everybody is thinking about new crop November in order to do marketing. 9:49 on the board today. If you haven't done any marketing yet, is 9:49 a place to think about starting?
If you haven't done any yet, I would be marketing some right here. Industry in general is talking about, with the amount of beans out there in the world, of prices going well under 9 this fall on new crop.
So it's beans and corn. What about the livestock? Boy, it has gone crazy to the upside again today.
Yeah, it's if you look at it week to week to week for the last 6 weeks, where do you jump in long? Do you jump in short? We went up a bunch, then we went down a bunch, and then today we were back up 2.25 on feeder cattle. June cattle were up $1.70. Hogs were up 70, and we had hogs last week at 83, back to 78. They're back to 82 today. Cattle were up in close to 160, back to 148. Here they are at 150 today in the June, and feeders at 215. We had them 230 to 206 in the last month.
I just don't remember a time in my me sitting in this chair that the livestock market has been so volatile for so long.
Very, very volatile based on I don't know what the rumor is at the moment, but on when you see big high prices, I would be protecting whatever you've got or using a little cash there. On the downside, I would probably look at buying into the board with a call, thinking that well, they will jump right back up. Tight supply, especially in cattle, and I think they're finding out in hogs, yeah, we've got them to a lot heavier weights, but sometimes we don't get to that weight because the price was so good, they sold them at lighter weights, thus less meat.
Thank you much, Pete.
Have a great one.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad has declared a state of emergency with nearly 17 million chickens and turkeys dead, dying, or scheduled to be culled due to a widening bird flu outbreak. The proclamation, in effect until May 31st, unless terminated earlier, activates disaster response and recovery procedures for the state's homeland security and emergency management personnel. It also allows state agencies to help in the disposal of poultry carcasses, an increasing problem in a state where about 27% of its 60 million egg-laying chickens will be wiped out. Iowa is the nation's leading egg producer, providing one of every 5 eggs consumed in the country. Overall, the outbreak has led to Midwest chicken and turkey producers losing more than 21 million birds to date. One chamber of the Texas legislature has passed the first measure to regulate the storage of chemicals since a fertilizer plant exploded in the town of West more than 2 years ago, killing 15 people and devastating a wide area around the plant. The Texas House gave preliminary approval to strengthening some rules for storing ammonium nitrate. The bill would give local fire marshals the power to inspect facilities and order owners to make changes if conditions in the facility could cause a fire or explosion. The proposal also would require that ammonium nitrate be stored separate from combustible materials. Tyson Foods today says that its profit jumped a better than expected 46% in the first 3 months of the year, lifted primarily by the company's prepared food segment. For its fiscal second quarter, Tyson reported a profit of $310 million, or 75 cents a share, up from $213 million, or 60 cents a share a year earlier. Chicken segment sales were relatively flat. Beef sales grew 8%. Pork sales fell 19%. Prepared food sales more than doubled to $1.87 billion from $861 million a year earlier as average price surged 27%. McDonald's CEO Steve Easterbrook says that he's stripping away layers of bureaucracy so the company can move faster to keep up with changing tastes in an effort to revive the sagging business. McDonald's is restructuring its units into four groups: the flagship U.S. market, international lead markets such as Australia and the United Kingdom, high growth markets such as China and Russia, and the rest of the world. Easterbrook also says that he's stressing that the company focus more on listening to customers, simplifying restaurant operations, and improving perceptions of its food. The turnaround blueprint comes as McDonald's is fighting intensifying competition from a variety of players and has admitted that it failed to keep up with changing values. More than 80 scouts will tour Kansas and the hard red winter wheat crop Tuesday through Thursday. The group, comprised of millers, bakers, traders, crop insurance agents, farmers, and media, will be traveling Kansas from Manhattan to Colby, evaluating the wheat crop and estimating its yield potential. Scouts leading the tour will release a statewide yield estimate on Thursday afternoon. A new White House review says that increasingly severe weather events, thought to be the result of a changing global climate, are costing the U.S. economy between $18 billion and $33 billion a year. The report recommends investments in the electric grid to protect it from severe storms that may be occurring more frequently because of global warming. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Corn farmers should pay attention to the spring migration of the black cutworm. Todd Gleason reports the moths wing their way into the Midwest every year.
The black cutworm rides the southerlies, north into the Corn Belt. The female moths look for farm fields lush and green, mostly with weeds. Winter annuals are the favored nesting ground, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
They go into those fields, lay eggs on those weeds, and eventually when those fields are planted, many of the surviving black cutworm larvae will move off those weed hosts onto corn seedlings. And cornfields that are still in that 1 to 4 leaf stage are very susceptible to cutting.
If those cuts are made below the growing point of the corn plant, then it dies. Most of the cutting, says Gray, takes place overnight or occasionally on a very overcast, dark, cloudy day.
But growers are definitely encouraged to look for early signs of cutworm activity, which would be small pinhole areas on leaves that have been removed by those very small caterpillars, typically in the 1 to 3 instar stage. Once the caterpillars go into that fourth larval instar, they can begin to cut plants.
Many insecticides can be used as rescue treatments if needed to combat the black cutworm. Most BT corn is also capable of protecting the crop, but not in equal measure.
Not all BT hybrids offer the same level of protection when it comes to black cutworms. Some are quite good at providing protection against cutting, but it can be confusing. And a lot of times growers may not be real clear on what protection they have. I encourage growers to avail themselves of a very good resource. It's called the Handy BT Trait Table. It's put out every year by Michigan State University and entomologist there, Chris DeFonso. And if you just go to Google and type in Handy BT Trait Table, you'll get a very informative table that will enable you to really see if the hybrid that you've chosen offers black cutworm protection.
If the hybrid chosen does not protect against black cutworm, then the farmer will clearly, urges Gray, need to pay much more attention to the life cycle of the insect and potentially gear up for rescue treatments as needed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with a look at cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
So I am hearing from a lot of different people, brokers, some farmers and the like, that elevators have a lot of grain that is still in the hands of the producer. And there's a reluctancy to give it up to the elevator. Is this your experience here at the Andersons?
Yes. I think we were looking last week. Historically, 22% of the crop is still left in the farmer's hands at this date. And I would say this year it's closer to a third. So quite a bit more old crop corn left. And I think the market knows that, and that's been pressuring the market. That combined with, you know, the good start that we're getting off to as far as planting goes, it just hasn't generated any excitement amongst the funds yet.
So at some point, elevators are going to have to sweep their floors.
Yes, yes. You know, it will. I think most of them work backwards. They say, you know, we want to be empty by September 1st. How much can we physically load out in August? How much can we physically load out in July? How much can we load out in June? And basically, you have to sell that much each month. And if the farmers haven't sold it, then you have to take a look at maybe going short your DP, even if the farmers haven't sold it yet.
Oh, so that would be one of the strategies. And I also kind of wonder about it is in terms of when all that grain needs to be pushed all at the same time, does it bring sort of a second harvest along the way?
It could bring an increase. I wouldn't say a second harvest. I don't think it's, you know, that big of an impact, but it certainly isn't going to help the basis. But up until now, basis has been screaming higher. So up until we get to that point where the farmers do decide to let loose of that, it sure feels like corn basis continues to work higher every week.
Yeah, better scream higher because futures are screaming lower.
That's exactly right.
So, okay, let's talk a little bit about new crop soybeans, getting any bids on those.
Not really. You know, people did a good job of selling beans last November, December, even in January when they were over $10. And so I think people feel comfortable with what they've got sold now. If they were over $10 or close to $10, I think people would probably make some more sales. But I think they feel comfortable with what they've got sold now. And, you know, these 10-cent rallies look nice, but they're still not $10 on the board. So until they get to that price, or until the farmers feel more comfortable with the new crop prospects, I think they're just not really excited about selling much more yet.
All right, then why don't we go and get your prices for today?
All right. Old crop corn is $3.54. New corn is $3.55. Old beans are $9.76. New beans are $9.27. Old wheat $4.63, and new wheat also $4.63.
Oh, nothing there on the wheat, just $4.63, huh?
Yeah.
All right, Greg, thanks for talking.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Someone from the Andersons joins us every Monday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. I'll be back in 2 minutes with the folk from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Homebrew Day. It's also National Candied Orange Peel Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1494, Columbus landed at Jamaica and met Native Americans who used Jamaican pimento or allspice to season and smoke meat, usually pigs, the foundation upon which Jamaican jerk developed. In 1854, Asa Finch was appointed as New York State entomologist, the first such in the United States. He studied insects and their effects on agricultural crops. Finch helped define the role for the scientist in solving public problems such as crop damage caused by insects. His annual reports became standard reading for entomologists and agriculturalists. In 1874, Frank Conrad was born, an American electrical engineer. His interest in sound waves led to the establishment of the first commercial radio station. He coined the term broadcast for regularly scheduled programs. In 1942, wartime food rationing began in the U.S., and in 2003, the first cloned mule was born at the University of Idaho. Researchers cloned the mule named Idaho Gem using a cell from a mule fetus and an egg from a horse. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as open as the window for planning was last week, I don't think we can say the same this week, can we?
Absolutely not. And some of this rain we've seen over the past 24 hours here in Illinois and Indiana, that's the start of this more active pattern that's setting up here for the next, looks like, couple of weeks, although this week looks to be the wettest overall and certainly more frequent rain activity and ultimately less hours for planting across not only Illinois and Indiana, but across much of the Midwest. So, yeah, certainly our stretch of dry weather is over here, and more frequent rain activity. But with that, temperatures will be warmer than normal, so it's not like we're getting into a wet-cold regime, but rather with the active weather here, it will come with warmer-than-normal temperatures, and this warmth that we've seen develop over the weekend, that looks to continue not only this week but into next week as well.
So new corn right in the ground is going to love the conditions.
Yeah, and again, so a little bit of slowdowns here in at least the kind of final corn planting, a bit more with soybean planting. But yeah, it's a pretty good start, especially in those areas that had been the driest here of late. Certainly a good improvement in soil moisture.
Do you think the window opens up fairly well after May 12th or no?
Yeah, there's no indication right now of any excessively wet conditions, and overall this pattern here featuring more ridging of high pressure across the northern and eastern section of the country that does look to continue. So once we get these waves of low pressure kind of out of the picture here, which does look to be the case here the second half of the month, that should open things up more. And even some of that begins to evolve next week as well as rainfall totals next week do not look as heavy as what we're seeing here this week. But overall, yeah, we don't see any kind of major issues here with planning coming up.
Anyone there at Earth Risk putting some bets down on a strong summer El Nino?
Well, from an El Nino standpoint here, we're at moderately strong or kind of borderline weak to moderately strong El Nino levels right now across the Pacific Ocean. So that has really begun to strengthen over the past several weeks, and it looks to continue as we go through the summer. So, yeah, we have very high confidence that from an ocean standpoint, we're going to be seeing El Nino conditions this summer. The big question, though, and the ultimate, what specifically is that impact? And every El Nino has a little different flavor as far as impacts are concerned, and kind of the market standard seems to be if you're in a strong El Nino event or even moderately strong, you tend to have to be exceptionally cold. Well, we've seen a variety of temperatures here in the Midwest during El Nino conditions. For example, back in 2002, that was an El Nino summer, and that was a hotter summer.
Gotta go, Mark. And that's Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies, and he is in Chicago, Illinois.